Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast, the podcast that travels back into time to review classic episodes of Jim Crockett Promotions' Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling program as they appear on the WWE Network. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined as always by my co-host Roman Gomez, and this is episode number 22. In this edition, we'll be taking a look at the Mid-Atlantic television program taped on Wednesday, June 9th, 1982 at the WPCQ Studios Channel 36 in Charlotte, North Carolina, and began airing in local markets beginning the weekend of Saturday, June 12th, 1982. If you like the podcast and want a little bit more of it on social media, just search at Mid-Atlantic Pod. We update everything when we can, with most of the focus going to our Twitter and Facebook pages. As I said, just search at Mid-Atlantic Pod, no matter what the social media source, and look for our logo. If you want to follow along with us as we review these championship wrestling episodes, you can do so by signing up for the WWE Network over at WWENetwork.com. You can also follow along by way of David Taub's write-ups of the shows, which are available over at MidAtlanticGateway.com. And finally, if you'd like to take an alternate look at this week in wrestling history, head on over to MidSouthPod.com. The Mid-South Television Wrestling Review Show with the great Brian Last and Mike Mills, who cover today in Bill Watts' territory on episode number 26 of their program. And without any other further ado, bring in my friend and co-host Roman Gomez. Roman, how are you today?
I'm doing good, Mike, especially on the heels of hearing that looks like Major League Baseball will be back. I know this is a wrestling podcast, but a lot of the fans out there of the Mid-Atlantic podcast are also baseball fans. So if baseball comes back, that would definitely help add a little normalcy to all our lives. That's for sure.
For historical sake, we may re-record these intros later on down the line to make sure that they're purely evergreen for the people. But we can't all hide our excitement here at the Arcadian Vanguard. As we record this episode of the show, we will pull back the curtain and let you know it is the morning of Wednesday, June 24th, 2020, and we have reached an agreement to have a 60-game schedule. Well, it wasn't really an agreement, really. It was the owners decreed a 60-game schedule after the Players Association and the owners could not get it together. But I was expecting there to be labor strife and war for a while, and them jockeying over whether it would be 63 or 65 or 66 games, Roman. But we actually lucked out a lot in this, and I got to ask you, because I know it's going to be coming up when we do the big 605 opening day special, but the DH in the National League, are you ready for this to be a thing forever, or are you ready for the purity of the National League to come back, whether that be in 2022 or 2023?
Having a DH in both leagues has been long, long, long overdue. Nothing is worse than watching a pitcher attempt to hit, can't sacrifice runners over, and I know people say there's strategy, blah, 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 but watching a pitcher attempt to hit and just make a fool of himself, not help his team, not sacrifice runners, give me an Edgar Martinez or somebody of that ilk, I'll take him over a National League hitting pitcher any day of the week.
Well, I would like to also use this time to open up the possibility of taking on some applications to be the new co-host of the show with such slander like this and making fun of the strategy of the National League and denying all of us the possibility of seeing great moments such as Jim Abbott hitting home runs and the sanctity of the National League. How dare you, my friend? Anyway, we'll get back to the matter at hand. And speaking of traitorous friends, Roman, this is the episode of Traitorous Friends. As there's not a whole lot of audio that I cut for this show, but the audio that was on it was very, very powerful and very direct. And as Uncle Bob opens the show today, he makes a very stark announcement for many people out there who have been celebrating the fact that Wahoo McDaniel was the new United States heavyweight champion. Unfortunately, the belt is back in evil hands again, as Bob opens up the show by announcing that the new United States heavyweight champion, Sergeant Slaughter, would be on the show. And Roman, before we introduce the reason that this took place, Bob's interview with the magnificent one, as he will point out, Don Morocco, did it surprise you a little bit to see Sergeant Slaughter there once again holding that title that Wahoo McDaniel was hyping up and very proud of to bring home to the fans?
Yeah, it was relatively a quick title change, wasn't it? Wahoo did not hold it that long.
Yeah, Sergeant Slaughter awarded the title by forfeit. That previous Monday in Greenville, South Carolina, Wahoo was tabbed to defend the title against Slaughter. He was not able to. It was announced that he was injured. He was attacked by Don Morocco, and I believe it was announced that Roddy Piper had also jumped Wahoo. Morocco would end up taking Wahoo's match that night against Sergeant Slaughter after Slaughter was declared the United States heavyweight champion. As it is written in the great book by Dick Bourne, the author of 10 Pounds of Gold and Big Gold as well, too, the book of the United States Heavyweight Championship, he does write that night in Greenville, quote, the announcement was made and the auditorium crowd nearly rioted. So this is now the second time that Wahoo McDaniel had lost the title without losing it in the ring, as some people may recall. In the end of summer 1981, Wahoo was attacked by Abdullah the Butcher at the behest of Roddy Piper. That caused him to not be able to defend the title and lose it there. There's another situation where Wahoo McDaniel has lost the United States heavyweight champion, not in a ring, but actually laying in a hospital bed. And Roman, we talked about it last week, the only person to really invoke the new rule, the new experimental rule where there must be a winner in title matches, was Sergeant Slaughter. And because of the rule that stated that Wahoo McDaniel could not defend his championship, this is how it goes for him. Their experimental rule has now caused Wahoo McDaniel to lose the U.S. Heavyweight Championship as the transition from Ole Anderson to Dory Funk Jr. in the booking department now seems to be complete.
Yes, and also that rule came into effect on one of the matches they showed with Wahoo and Slaughter when Wahoo defended the belt against Slaughter when he rammed him into the ring post and did not get disqualified before he pinned Slaughter. So the rule seemed to be in effect for those two, but then some of the other storylines, it was all kind of convoluted or whatever, but at least they made it make sense as far as Slaughter regaining the belt. And I don't think Wahoo and Piper are going to be exchanging Christmas cards or anything, because that's twice Piper's helped Wahoo lose the United States heavyweight title.
Yeah, and as the years go on with this show, you know, Wahoo McDaniel getting screwed out of championships would be the one of the impetuses to get him to turn to the dark side in 1984 and team up with Tully Blanchard, once again centered around that United States heavyweight championship. But we would be jumping way ahead, as we got to just settle on the fact that Wahoo's partner has turned on him, Don Morocco, very salty over the last few weeks. After being shut out of the World Tag Team Championship picture, Wahoo winning the U.S. title and having dates set up. Obviously, as I mentioned, Ole Anderson, the World Tag Team Championship, would be heading literally south to Georgia. His agreement with Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling has now come to an end. Dory Funk Jr. up from Florida as the official booker. The changeover taking place in the next couple of weeks. You will see the Florida fingerprints all over the place. We've already seen it in one way, as Bill Alfonso is up in the territory and Tommy Young is actually down working in Florida right now. But Bob Cottle is always the stalwart up there at the podium. And the first interview of the day, he brings in Don Morocco, or as we should say, the Magnificent One.
We've got top-notch stars in every single match. Stars like the new U.S. champ, Sergeant Slaughter, Jack Briscoe, Porkchop Cash, King Parsons. Also a six-man tag team match. In one corner, you're going to see the likes of King Kong Mosca, Ivan Koloff, and Ninja. And right here, walking in now, Don Morocco. Don?
Magnificent Morocco! Magnificent Morocco! The Prince of Darkness has returned. It's magnificent. And if you ever call me Don Morocco again, I will not be responsible for what's happened.
I've heard Magnificent Morocco. I also heard that you've been helping the likes of Roddy Piper and Sergeant Slaughter.
I came out here last week and I told you. I told you how the Indian had double-crossed me. I told you how I wasn't going to stand around, how I was losing money from the World Tag Team Champion. Shut up, you! So what happens then? So Wahoo's laid up in the hospital now. Right now, what?
Yeah, Morocco. Jack Briscoe.
You're not fooling anybody anymore. Everybody knows the color that you are. Everybody knows what you did to me. And everybody knows you're the reason why the Chief's not the U.S. champion anymore. If you had any guts at all, you'd get in the ring and wrestle me right now.
Listen, Briscoe, I know you're one of the greatest NWA world champions ever, the last one to put his belt against on the line against the Magnificent Morocco, but you've had your day. Roddy Piper, Roddy Piper has signed me, the first professional wrestler to sign a six-figure contract for X amount of days. Roddy Piper has money to back up. He didn't come to me with a handshake. He didn't
care
come
about,
to me
you know.
With friendship. Yeah. He didn't come to me with promises like you and the other Indian. He didn't come to me with nothing.
Yeah, I know what you are. You're nothing but a beach bum.
Keep your finger off.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what.
Wait a minute.
Jack. I'll tell you what. I'm going to be in that ring.
You got it. One Indian is down. You're going down too, Indian.
All right. Fans, boy, what a way to get started right here with Magnificent Morocco now and Jack Briscoe, and talking about a magnificent way to get started, this match in the ring.
Well, then, there you hear from the Magnificent Morocco talking to Bob Caudle, making Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Champion Jack Briscoe very upset. He comes out there, challenges Morocco. As Morocco tries to change the subject back, it gets a little bit more heated. Jack Briscoe slapped Morocco across the face, baited Morocco into the match. We got it coming up here a little bit later on. A heck of a interview, a heck of a way to start the show, and a heck of a match we're going to have here coming up a little bit later on the show. But hot start there for Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, Roman.
This was a great way to open the show. I mean, this really established Morocco as the heel when he comes straight out from the beginning and says that he's Magnificent Morocco, the Prince of Darkness. Now, when you're called calling yourself the Prince of Darkness, obviously you are not a babyface. So that left no doubt about that he was a heel. And then he brought up a very good point about all the money. You know, he kind of rehashed all the money that Wahoo had cost him. So it made sense if Piper comes at you with six figures, he took the money to make up for some of the money he lost by moving his family from Hawaii, his pregnant wife, et cetera, et cetera. So not only did he take Piper's money, but he went to bed with the devil. Now he's teaming with Piper, and him and Briscoe are now going at it. I mean, he has definitely cemented his heel turn with this opening segment here.
Bob Caudle, unintentional heel to the underneath talent sometimes. As you heard Bob there start to intro the first match that was going to be taking place, there have been times in the past where Bob has walked over to the green screen and a talent has appeared up on the screen, and Bob has misread that talent. I don't know how that happens. It's a very small studio. It's a very small amount of space between the ring and monitors and the podium itself. So I don't know exactly what sometimes happens with Bob and not recognizing the talent that happens to be taking place in the ring, but it did happen here. Bob has announced Sergeant Slaughter's name. He knows him. He's got his weight down. He's the U.S. champion. And then the new face pops up on the screen. Bob gives Slaughter's same weight again as he tries to buy time and figure out exactly who this person is in the ring. And he looks up, and there's a pause. He looks up again, and there's a pause, and he squints, and he says, Slaughter's opponent, David Patterson. It was Steve Seibert, who as the show then goes to break, you could see him trying to communicate with Bob to say, no, I am not the Cuban David Patterson. I'm the other large, hairy man who has teamed with David Patterson a few times, Steve Seibert, and that is that. And while we never like to jump on Uncle Bob here, he has had more than his share of problems with this one, Roman, whether it be Mike Davis at times or no matter who it is. Usually the heels get it worse, but Steve Seibert being called out of his name by Bob Caudle as they went to break.
Yeah, it reminds me of a few podcasts back. I think it was Bill White that came out with the shirt that actually had his name on it. You look back now, you kind of wonder if that was like a little subliminal thing so Caudle could look at it and not forget his name. You know, for some reason, Cottle seems to have a hard time with the names of some of these underneath guys.
And it can happen. You know, you've been on TV before. You're getting yelled at. You got somebody in your ear saying you got to do this. You don't have the papers in front of you. You know, at least he got Slaughter right. You don't want to see him out there announcing Sergeant Slaughter is like is Big Bill White or something like that. You know, the Ali Bey the Turk or something. At least he got that one down. And, you know, it was one of those weird format things in the show that they do go to a break before the match begins. And when they come back, we don't have the match beginning right away. What we actually have is Sergeant Slaughter, who jumped down from the ring to talk a little bit to Bob.
Your opponent, Steve Seibert, up here in the ring, ready for you, but right here, the new U.S. champion, Sergeant
Steve
Slaughter.
Steve Seibert can wait just like I waited every night to win this title back. You know, Wahoo McDaniels thought of all these kind of matches. He had Indian strap matches. He had Lumberjack Canadian matches. He had all kinds of matches. And when it came down to my type of match, a boot camp match, he didn't show up. He didn't show up, Bob Cottle. So I get the belt, that's why.
Wait a minute, Wahoo was injured. Wahoo was injured, he's been in
the
hospital.
What are you talking about, he was injured?
That's right, in another match he was injured, his knee was injured, he's been in the hospital. He couldn't show up, the new rules, there's got to be a winner. That's the reason you're the champ right now.
Well, I could have beat him any time I wanted to anyway. Every time I wrestled him, I beat him. But he never put the title up on the line. So I waited and I waited. I went through all his Funny Dewey matches. And finally, when I got the chance to put the title on the line with my kind of match, he doesn't show up. I don't believe you. I don't believe he got hurt. I think he just didn't show up because he's yellow.
He's been hurt. He's going to be out tomorrow, and Wahoo will be back by next week, fans. By the middle of next week, he'll be back wrestling again.
And there you hear Sergeant Slaughter playing it up to the people at home. Oh, I didn't know Wahoo was hurt. I just know that he was yellow and didn't decide to show up for plenty of the matches that we had planned, including boot camp matches and lumberjack matches and all of those matches of the like. I guess notable to point out that in Greensboro on Sunday, June 6th, the day before he was stripped of the title for not being able to defend it in Greenville, Wahoo did defend the title for one last time in a lumberjack match, defeating Sergeant Slaughter. So it must have been a real surprise for those fans in Greensboro to then turn on the TV on Saturday and find out that within less than a week, that title was off Wahoo McDaniel and back in the evil hands of Sergeant Slaughter there. Roman, any thoughts on Slaughter's promo there, which was pretty much a good stock heel fare, but got the point across?
Yeah, it was definitely a heel thing. I mean, deep down, anybody that's followed this feud and followed the career of Wahoo McDaniels knows he's not yellow. He's not a coward. He would show up for any type of fight. Wahoo was as tough as nails. So for Slaughter to make it sound like Wahoo was afraid or scared, you know, definitely a heel tactic. And, you know, I thought it was effective.
Referee for the day, Sonny Fargo. No surprise here. Non-title match. Although it is in some ways a little bit of a rarity where you have two big burly bad guys going at it. Steve Seibert, if he needed to learn from somebody who was a big burly guy who was able to get the style down very well, Sergeant Slaughter, your guy, a lot easier to learn from him than say, oh, I don't know, an Angelo Mosca or somebody like that. But during this match that Slaughter eventually won with the Cobra Clutch, they were able to move a little bit of other storylines across, one of the more notable ones being Jake Roberts, as we announced last week. Roberts was out with an injury. They showed footage of him getting blinded by Ninja with the mist in his eyes. I have a feeling when Jake Roberts comes back, we're going to start seeing a little bit more of a attitude that's associated with him. It's notable. It's not mentioned on the show, but it is notable that also on the 6th, the same night that Wahoo McDaniel was defeating Sergeant Slaughter in Greensboro, the rest of the crew was up in Toronto at Maple Leaf Gardens, and it was on the 6th that Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff for the NWA Mid-Atlantic television title, which was not known to the people in the Carolinas, as that title change was only recognized up in Ontario and Michigan and anywhere where they would be affected by that Western New York. So that area has now seen a new television champion, that being the Boogie Woogie Man, Jimmy Valiant. We'll see if that ends up taking place down here as well, too, in the Carolinas. But we move on to our next match, Jack Briscoe, Magnificent Morocco. it's rare you get a match this good on TV. Mid-Atlantic's had some good ones recently, Roman, but a literally a world championship level match between two guys who maybe in the Mid-Atlantic, this was a new matchup, but for people down in Florida who happen to be seeing the syndicated TV, this battle between Morocco and Briscoe was very familiar.
Yes, definitely. Two legendary wrestling personalities and no strangers to each other. Of course, Jack Briscoe, former NWA champion. Morocco was a great Intercontinental champion. Those two together on free TV is just, it's a great thing to watch. As a fan, you know, you can't help but kind of mark out a little bit. You know, Briscoe versus Morocco, and we get to see it for free. I was definitely excited when I saw that these two were going to go up against each other.
Now, the name that has been playing in the shadows today has been the rowdy one, Roddy Piper, who had sauntered out to take a closer look at the proceedings.
Over here and see if Roddy Piper right here with us. Roddy Piper, you didn't come in to assist the magnificent Morocco in any way in this match, did you?
He doesn't need assistance.
He doesn't need assistance.
Are you Jack deaf?
Jack Briscoe said it was both of you that hurt his knee, that it took both of you to injure his knee.
Doesn't take both of us to injure his knee. Didn't take both of us to injure Wahoo's knee.
I got to say one thing. This is the most subdued Roddy Piper I've ever seen. Morocco on that knee. Briscoe limps away.
There you hear from a very subdued and evil-sounding Roddy Piper. Roman, I don't think it's a surprise to anybody listening out there who's got any knowledge of Jack Briscoe at all that this was not a whole lot of flying maneuvers off the ropes or anything like that. Good, solid mat work that took place. Briscoe and Morocco, as I mentioned, very familiar with each other. Morocco working as a full-fledged heel now. And at one point, when he gets towards the end of the match, Jack Briscoe locked up in the figure four. Briscoe reverses it. The same type of routine that Roddy Piper attempted on Jerry Briscoe by jumping off the top rope when he didn't expect it. He does the same thing here, jumps off the top rope on top of Jack Briscoe, injuring him, hurting him, and causing the disqualification. This allows Piper and Morocco to start beating on Briscoe. There's a moment where Briscoe pressed up against the post, attempts to lambaste him with a chair, misses, smashes it into the post, makes a great sound. Briscoe escapes. The fans all kind of gasp, and Jimmy Valiant and Paul Jones run out to help Jack Briscoe finally fight off the bad guys. A underwhelming finish in that it's a disqualification, but certainly not a surprise, as that was a arena match that was certainly just made to kind of get everything across here, as Don Morocco being an evil person and Roddy Piper being the constant thorn in everyone's side, most certainly Jack Briscoe's.
Yes, and I thought it was very good at the beginning of this contest when Cottle's on the mic and he recapped things a little bit, and he said that Briscoe and Morocco were in a tag match, and that Morocco would not tag Briscoe in, and that Morocco also helped Piper hurt Briscoe's knee. And if you notice during this contest, Briscoe has his knee bandaged. So I thought that was kind of good that Cottle set up the backstory a little bit. And as we talked about earlier, Morocco said Piper paid him. You know, he's paying him six figures. So when Piper came out on the mic, you know, you didn't need to be Columbo to know that he was definitely going to get involved in this Morocco match. And he comes in, he goes off the top rope rather quickly, and that's because he was in street clothes. You know, I noticed it looked like he lost his footing a little bit, but they double-team Briscoe. The faces come in and make the save, Paul Jones and Valiant. But, yeah, this was a good job to further the angle a little bit, show how devious Piper is. He's already injured Jerry Briscoe. Now he's going to work on Jack Briscoe, who was already previously injured. And I just thought this was a great way to further along this angle.
It was then time for localized promos, which we do not get. We have the master reel for this tape. And at this time, the new Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Champions, Porkchop Cash, And Iceman King Parsons, pre-Iceman, just King Parsons at this point, came over to speak to Bob. They did that to introduce their upcoming match that they had in the ring against the previously mentioned Monk and Pretty Boy Carl Fergie. This was another match where we were able to move a couple of things forward. Once again, it was noted that Jake Roberts was going to be coming back from his injury after the Ninja had got him. It's also mentioned by Bob that former United States heavyweight champion and area stalwart Greg the Hammer Valentine would be coming back. And at this point, Valentine had been appearing on WWF TV, had been doing it, began doing it in June of 1981, and ended up being full-time in the area around October or so, 1981. When Sergeant Slaughter rolled into the area from the WWF and got done smacking around Bob Backlund, it was Greg Valentine's turn to not only go up there and feud heavy with Bob Backlund, but also with Pedro Morales over the Intercontinental Championship. And we'll be seeing Valentine back at the end of the month. This match, no real surprise here in that it was just a way to once again get over Parsons and Cash as a team and as the NWA Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Champions. It's never expressly stated and has never been said to me this way, but I would also assume the way that these titles are now being focused upon, it is a way to kind of ease out of talking about the NWA World Tag Team Championship, which has been dropped from mention completely now. Carl Fergie is in the ring. The Monk, it does not look like a monk in any way. It doesn't look like, he looks like a monk in the same way that Ali Bey looks like a terrible Turk, which is to say he doesn't, but he would continue on with this role in Memphis and in other places as well here too, but relatively underwhelming. The finish came when Parsons hit two drop kicks and then an Ali shuffle that ends up getting a small package on Fergie, which was a little bit of a surprise to me. But I guess if you're worried about how the finish is going to go, you might as well have the pro take it. But Carl Fergie gets rolled up and Parsons and King get the victory, Roman.
Yeah, no surprise. And just a little interesting, I thought, just watching it, that you follow up two drop kicks with an inside cradle. I thought that was a different way of match to an end, but you know, it was a different era. There was different ways of pinning people, and to follow two drop kicks with an inside cradle, it just seemed a little odd, I guess.
Then we get Bob doing some interviews again. Paul Jones comes over talking a little bit about the aforementioned Angelo Mosca. That's a feud that'll be taking place, kind of tying up each other's time. Jones is then joined by Jack Briscoe, who's still blown up a little bit. Well, really, Jack Briscoe never got blown up, but was breathing a little bit heavier and was certainly drenched in sweat after his match with Don Morocco and Roddy Piper, who are the subject of his ire.
Jack, I tell you, I'm glad to see you getting around on that leg.
Well,
Jack.
Thank you, Bob. I tell you, Morocco, turncoat Morocco, money greedy Morocco, coward rat Roddy Piper. They've tried everything they could do to try to get this belt from me. They're unable to do it. The reason I'm wearing this brace today is because the Roddy Piper bought off Don Morocco. And I want to show you something right here, Bob. I'm just thankful. Look, it's a chair.
Could have been your
head. I'm just thankful. This wasn't my head here. So, Roddy Piper, that's the way you want things done. That's the way you want it. I don't care. It's no DQs, no disqualification. You can't run. The belt's here. I want you. When are you going to come and get this belt?
All right, fans, and I tell you, I think it's just tremendous. That leg could have really been damaged, and Jack is ready. He's after Morocco. Anything can happen at this point.
Well, Roman, there you hear Jack Briscoe, still very upset. All of his attention now turned on Roddy Piper. Don Morocco, we won't forget about him either, but the cause of all this, Roddy Piper not only trying to put his brother out of professional wrestling, now trying to put him out of professional wrestling, trying to figure out a way to take back that NWA Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship. This feud will only get better from here.
And you can see why Briscoe was fired up. You know, if you go back into that time, using a chair or attempting to use a chair on somebody back then, man, you were trying to hurt them, that it was something serious. You know, nowadays, chairs, you get desensitized to them. You know, it's just part of a spot. You know, it's no big deal. But back then, to try to swing a chair and hit somebody was a big deal. So for Briscoe to come out with that chair and it was dented and you could hear the sound when it hit the turn, that was a big deal back then. So you can understand the anger in Briscoe. And I thought that was kind of effective. It's just a another sign of the times, you know, how different things were back then.
Absolutely. And the fact that this feud is going to continue on the way that it is, the fact that that chair and that missed shot against Piper, that sound that was made, that dented chair that everybody got a chance to see, it's going to be something that continues to play for weeks on end, whereas, you know, the ECW era, you see a guy get brained with a chair. I mean, there were four or five of them bent, you know, on a daily basis. And now we have this one in this angle that will go on for weeks at a time. And it never touched Jack Briscoe's head. It missed him completely and hit the post. But that symbolism will actually mean a lot more than just if Briscoe got bashed over the head a zillion times as this feud continued on. Matches needed to continue on as well, too. And Bob introduces the next match on the green screen there. Gets everybody's names right. Paul Jones, Ken Timms. Bob not having his best show, as it's pointed out by David Taub. He was laboring a lot at times during this show. Paul Jones out there basically to get working on Ken Timms. Hits him with his full two football tackles to clip the leg from out under Timms before he goes with the Indian Deathlock. Once again, Roman, we talked about a little bit, I think it was last week's show. It was either last week or the week before. That Indian Deathlock is a move that, as we sit here, in the time that we record this show, would be a move that I would love to see come back kind of in some form.
Yeah, awesome finishing move. Very believable. And in this contest, Jones pretty much had his way with Timms, you know, until he put on the Indian Deathlock. And that was the beginning of the end for Ken Timms.
It was once again time for local interviews, and once again, we don't have any localized promos coming from anywhere, so we go with the stock interview style. Kelly Kaniski and Mike Rotundo, who have a match coming up, they walk out and talk to Bob, and like a lot of Kaniski and Rotundo interviews, we will go ahead and just bypass this one. Again, not insulting at all, two baby faces very early in their career, very nervous, not exactly natural orators out there, but very slowly, moment by moment, Mike Rotundo makes a little bit of improvement every time out there with the interviews. Kelly Kaniski oftentimes doesn't know what he's saying, but at least he's got some confidence going out there and saying it. Son of Big Thunder, former NWA champion. Any thoughts on Kaniski and Mike Rotundo, who is at times certainly human Xanax, human Ambien? Mike Rotundo can be on the mic.
Well, one little beef, you know, and it may seem minor, just he's done it on more than one occasion when he calls it the Mid-Atlantic Conference. This isn't college. This is pro wrestling, you know, like call it Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, you know, like that always just kind of bugged me how he called it conference, because that made it seem like a small little tiny group or organization instead of part of the National Wrestling Alliance, you know, like I kind of wish somebody had talked to him about that and got him to stop saying conference.
I'm trying to think now. When did the Big East started in, like, 79, I think it was. I think it was, like, around 1979 the Big East Conference started. Basically, mostly a basketball conference centered around the Jesuit schools, you know, Villanova, Georgetown, and St. John's, you know, schools like that. Syracuse a part of that, but I'm trying to think of it. If even Syracuse had an association or affiliation at the time that Mike Rotundo was going there, dare you to call it the Mid-Atlantic Conference, the Atlantic Coast Conference, Michael, where all the good basketball was at the time. University of Maryland, North Carolina, that other team, Duke, which I don't want to talk about. Sure, probably makes a lot of
listeners
happy.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Duke either for obvious reasons.
Yeah, who would like Duke?
If you go back in time, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Bruce Mitchell would like Duke. You can't like Duke. Nobody likes Duke. Anyway, we got to get away from that. Back to the action in the ring. And it was time for action as Mike Rotundo and Kelly Kaniski were joined by Mike Davis to face off against the very plotting heel team of the Ninja, Ivan Koloff, and all of our favorites, Angelo Mosca Sr. He's, you know, David Taub does note in his write-up of the show, you know, Mike Davis has been pointed out of Rotundo, Kaniski, and Davis, certainly the best interview of the three, and how they usually like to do these promos. As we mentioned last week with, you know, Juan Reynoso coming out with the privates, and next week we're going to have the Monk coming out there with the privates, that they usually feel like there's safety in numbers when it comes to this interview. So, you know, even though they're only 2-minute segments, they send out three guys just to be safe. But where the hell was Mike Davis during that interview to kind of save the day here, Roman?
Exactly. The one guy with an ounce of personality, and he's the one they keep out of the interview.
Kolov has a bandage over his right eye, probably plays off the fact that just days earlier he was already involved in some hellacious words with Jimmy Valiant. We did point out last week on the show that Valiant was trying to figure out a way that he could tether himself to Ivan Kolov to make sure he couldn't run away. He was already having cage matches with them. They end up starting to have Russian chain matches, so probably explain some of the banging up on Ivan Kolov's head there. No surprise, Ivan Kolov, Mosca, and the Ninja get the victory. Talk about bad finishers. Once again, Angelo Mosca, the clubbing right hand to the head. Mike Davis takes on the unfortunate L here, and that's pretty much that.
Yeah, and there was one spot in here, Mike, that it kind of cracked me up, or made me scratch my head, I should say, is when Ninja tags in Mosca, Rotundo hits Mosca in the stomach, and Mosca starts moving his head up and down a million times an hour like he's a freaking bobblehead. And I'm like, you're getting hit in the stomach, so you make your head go up and down. I didn't understand the correlation of that. And those of you listening, if you get a chance, look for that spot. Just very, very weird to look at. Very bizarre. I don't know what Mosca was doing there. But it had a lot of action, lots of back and forth, and no team had the advantage for too long. And, it wasn't a bad match, but I just thought that spot with Mosca was kind of unusual.
How Mosca will sell things, and even more than that, how he just registers things, how he goes about everything. He's always been very awkward to me, and I don't want to bash Angelo Mosca here any more than we have to. We're going to have a whole year of bashing his son coming up when we get to 1984. But
oh, God.
Just seems to be a throwback to a different era of selling and a different era of how to go about things. And oftentimes, as we've seen with Mosca, it does not make for smooth or clean matches. That is for sure. But it does not go on forever. Bad guys get the victory, which leads us to, unfortunately, the end of the show, but fortunately, a return to the Superfecta.
Fans right here. Roddy Piper.
Tommy Rich.
Magnificent.
I put Rich in the ditch. Where's Wahoo McDaniels? Wahoo McDaniels is gone.
He's going to be back.
Magnificence here. Jack Briscoe. What happened to Jack Briscoe? You want to see a combination? You want to see
Two
is better than one.
When something ails you, you go to the doctor. Mr. Piper has a lot of money. Aside from a six-figure contract, I got little bonuses. $5,000 in Atlanta for some fat slob. It doesn't matter. We're having a good time.
It doesn't matter, though.
It really doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Because the Magnificent One, the Prince of Darkness, and Roddy Piper, the man who has set the East Coast on fire. We got it down. Ask Briscoe, where was the Indian? Where was Wahoo? Ask me, where was Wahoo?
Where was
he? Was in the hospital. Yeah. Right where Briscoe should be.
It's a pleasure to be here.
It was magnificent.
Roddy Piper, magnificent.
And there was King one little Indian. Well, I'm the man who walks and talks, does exactly what he wants to do. They call me the master of disaster. And Paul Jones, you tell people that I'm a ding-dong. Well, my name happens to be King Kong. I don't know where you learn to speak English, but my name is King Kong Mosca, the master of disaster with one of the toughest elbows in professional wrestling. You know what makes me sick? Guys like Briscoe, Wahoo McDaniels. All they do is cry, and Paul Jones, well, I'm going to give you something to cry about, because since I come in to the Mid-Atlantic area, I have nothing but respect given to me, and I'm going to demand it from now on.
Ivan Kolov.
You know, all the people are going around saying that I am a coward, that I am afraid to stay in the ring with this boogie-woogie man because of what happened here just recently on television, when he tried to challenge me to a match, when he come into the ring and be with his partner, with this Rotunda, and Weaver step aside. I know what he tried to do. He tried to get me in a situation where possibly I get hurt in the tag team match.
than whenever he wrestled me for my TV belt. I am injured. Then that way he'd be able to take it away from me. You see, I'm not stupid. I know this. I know, Boogeyman. This is what you tried to do to Kolob. But you're going to have to wait a long time. Matter of fact, I got a couple plans in store for you, Boogeyman. A couple plans you will not like. So I don't care what partner you get. You bring him on. I got the set.
There you hear from a conglomerate of bad guys, Roddy Piper, the Magnificent Morocco, Angelo Mosca, Ivan Koloff, and even though you don't hear from him, the ninja who doesn't talk was out there as well. Roman, a lot to kind of unpack there out of those interviews, if you so choose. One of the things that I want to kind of point out is, and we don't see them on TV every week, and granted, we're only watching the Mid-Atlantic shows. Unfortunately, the worldwide wrestling shows are not up on the network yet. So it does limit it a little bit, but it's kind of crazy to think about the fact that Ivan Koloff and Jimmy Valiant have been feuding literally all year now. We have hit the half point of the year. We are rapidly moving into July, the seventh month, and we still have Jimmy Valiant and Ivan Koloff raging over the NWA Mid-Atlantic Television Championship.
Spoiler alert, they would feud for another 82 years before it was all said and done. And when I saw them both at Cauliflower Alley a few years ago, I thought maybe they would feud, you know. But, yeah, that was a long feud, but people got into it. You know, Valiant was a man of the people, and Ivan was the hated Russian, and just they never got tired of it. So if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, people kept showing up to see it, so they kept going with it. And as far as the promos, there was two things I noticed on the Piper one. First of all, it was good to see him show a little life. When he was on commentary during the Morocco match, you know, Cottle mentioned how subdued he was. My gosh, Piper sounded like he just woke up out of a coma. So in this promo, he's got a little life and he's chumming with Morocco. And the other thing I thought it would have been a great T-shirt, much like the one that Wahoo had that said, "I broke Wahoo's leg." I thought Piper, that would have been brilliant to have a shirt that said, "I put Rich in a ditch." What a great line. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, and a subtle note for anybody out there who, and there were plenty of them surely at the time, who were getting Channel 17 out of Atlanta on the satellite or on their cable system. They saw some of the wildness and the raging that'll be taking place down there from Piper, whether it be with Tommy Rich, and or you hear, you know, the mentioned Morocco said $5,000 in Atlanta from some fat slob. I don't know if that was for the fact that Piper had been feuding with Dusty Rhodes, or maybe that's taken a shot at old Pigface Ole Anderson now that he was going to be exclusively down there. And I guess I should mention about old Pigface Ole Anderson that even though we won't mention the NWA World Tag Team Championship much on this program in the next upcoming weeks, we are going to have an update courtesy of Gordon Solie down in Atlanta to tie everything together and to make sure that anybody that happened to be seeing the Georgia show in a Mid-Atlantic territory, whether that be throughout the Carolinas, whether that be in Florida, whether that be in Michigan and in Ontario and in Western New York, they make sure to tie everything together and make sure that you know what happened with those NWA World Tag Team Championships and why you will soon be seeing Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen wearing those on national TV. We have reached the end of the show with those interviews, Roman. And any bow to put on a show that was, you know, we didn't cut a whole lot of audio from it, but not to demean the talk. The talk was there. It just happened to be that the action was even better than the talk was.
Yeah, and I thought it was really good. The Morocco furthering him as a heel, just the way he's done. We had talked a couple weeks ago how there was no passion in his interviews. Now when you see him, it's like there's no doubt he's a heel. He is a bad guy. He's a jerk. He wants to hurt people. He's hell-bent on revenge. He's got a chip on his shoulder. So that's something that really stuck out with me on that. And it's kind of interesting to see him and Piper in his alliance, because in Georgia, Morocco was part of the reason Piper became a babyface, but that's another story for another time. But it's just kind of cool to see Piper and Morocco aligned during this episode and this time during Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling.
The Magnificent Morocco, as he told Bob Caudle last week on the show. Don't call me Don. Don't call me Don! Very serious about that, but very serious about these results here coming up. And we begin on Thursday the 10th in Sumter, South Carolina. Sergeant Slaughter defeated Mike Rotundo, who was subbing for Wahoo McDaniel, and Paul Jones defeated Angelo Mosca. The next night in Cincinnati on the 11th, Roddy Piper defeated Bob Armstrong in a Canadian Lumberjack match, while Sergeant Slaughter defeated Don Morocco. Also on the 11th in Knoxville, Tennessee at Chillaway Park Amphitheater, Jack Briscoe and Jimmy Valiant face off against Ivan Koloff and the Ninja. In Richmond on the 12th at the Coliseum, Sergeant Slaughter defeated King Parsons, while Jack Briscoe and Paul Jones defeated Roddy Piper and Don Morocco in the main event. On the 13th in Roanoke at the Civic Center, Sergeant Slaughter defeated Jay Youngblood, while Jack Briscoe knocked off Roddy Piper and Jimmy Valiant defeated the Ninja. Also on the 13th in Asheville, North Carolina at the Civic Center, Jack Briscoe defeated Roddy Piper, and Jimmy Valiant, Jay Youngblood, and Paul Jones defeated Ivan Koloff, Angelo Mosca, and Gene Anderson. On Monday in Greenville at the Memorial Auditorium, the Ninja and Roddy Piper defeated Jack Briscoe and Jimmy Valiant. On Tuesday, there was no wrestling held in Raleigh at the Civic Center, but down in Columbia, South Carolina at the Township Auditorium, Jack Briscoe defeated Roddy Piper, and King Parsons and Pork Chop Cash defeated the Privates. As I mentioned earlier on, if you like this show and want more things related to it, you can find them via all of our social media. We have all of it, but we update Twitter and Facebook the most. Just search Mid-Atlantic Pod and look for the logo. Please support all of the shows here in the extended 605 family of podcasts. We don't condescend, and we are dedicated to preserving and accurately archiving wrestling history. And I'm happy that this podcast, executive produced by me, for the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network, can be a part of that. For Roman Gomez, I'm Mike Sempervivi. Take us out of here, Uncle Bob.
And that'll do it for this week. See you next week. And until then, so long for now.